Hello and welcome to episode 382 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is November 6, 2023. I'm Rollo McFlugel, and with me is my co-host Slappy Jones. Show notes page for this episode will be mcflugel.com/382. excuse me, I am getting over a bit of a cold or something, and then yesterday I went to an event that basically immediately made me lose my voice. So bear with me. As I might struggle.
That was the Taylor Swift concert.
Oh, it's great. You know.
Good.
We're real Swifties over here.
Yeah.
No, but as some of you might have seen, if you follow me on Twitter, I went to the Eagles game yesterday and against the Dallas Cowboys. And if there was any sort of, you know, question about the outcome of that game, shame on you, because Eagles rule and Dallas stinks. So,
It's funny. I thought it was cute. It was pretty funny. Like the Cowboys fans thought they had a shot at the end.
Oh, I know.
It was pretty funny. They get like a 50-yard PI penalty, and then was it like a roughing the passer? So there was some other 50.
Yeah, kind of weak sauce. And then you know, on that play with the roughing the passer, they just refs decided to ignore Josh Sweat getting choked out on a hold.
Yeah.
Well, these things happen, and I would like to remind any Dallas Cowboys fan out there that wants to complain about the penalties or anything else in the game that down by five with 27 seconds left, the Cowboys had it first and five on the 6-yard line.
Ended up having to throw a Hail Mary.
The outcome was going minus 20 yards, and then you fumbled. So, yeah, that's that. So, you know, it's funny, once again, the Eagles, you know, did the tush push like 15 times and each time it worked, including on their one own inch yard line just to get them some breathing space, which is just incredible. Can you imagine any other team doing a quarterback sneak on your own inch yard line? Like you just have a lot of confidence. Like That's awesome. They did it like on their own 20 and everything again. They did it for a touchdown. They did it on third down. They did it on, I don't know if they had a fourth down play. I don't think they needed to even get to four. I think they did. First, before I forget this, do you want some context for that 2-point conversion that Dak Prescott went out of bounds for before he crossed the line?
Sure.
Wondering why he didn't kind of like, you know, go upfield sooner and put a shoulder into a guy and try to make the play. Well, when Dak Prescott got his tattoos, he did it under anesthesia. He got knocked out for his tattoos.
Interesting.
I
never heard of anyone doing that.
Well, Dak
is that
does.
True or is that like a joke?
No, that's true.
Wow.
That's just. But anyway, everyone with the tush push, they all want to complain. Oh, this should be illegal. This is not fair. And, you know, they should change the rules for it. Well, on that fourth and goal, the Dallas got the touchdown on the field, and then it got reviewed and it got overturned because the tight end's knee was down before he crossed the goal line. There are now people saying like, oh, this is really unfair. They should change this rule. Why? If he, you know, you have to go to the ground to maintain possession to complete the catch. You don't get where you finished the completion of the catch as your forward progress. This is unfair. It's like, well, no. As lots of people mentioned, like going out of bounds. You know, you get 2 feet in and control the ball. You don't have to, it doesn't matter where you stop. But anyway, it's the rule.
Yeah, no, I saw that tweet and I agree it's a funny rule. But it is a rule. It's not like it was applied incorrectly. That's the rule.
it's the rule, and it's been that way for
as long as I can ever remember.
Right. And it's just every other time it happens, because there's been so many times on trying to get the first down, similar kind of thing happens. And you don't get it. It happens
all the time. They don't like mark the ball where you actually land and complete the catch. Right. It's never been that way. As far as I'm not a historian here, but you know, I've been in the game a long time. Never knew it to be that way. It was applied correctly.
Yeah. And but suddenly when it's for the Eagles, and you know, it's we got to change the rules, because that's the only way apparently you can beat the Eagles. You just got to change the rules.
A couple of years ago, they had a big discussion about how to define a catch, and I thought the rule, the previous rule, was way more clear when you do have to complete it to the ground. And they may have gone back to that, but they changed it to like, it was very, you know,
the football.
It's not an easy thing, but if you just control the ball through the ground, that seems as clear cut as it can be.
Right. So, and yeah, there's edge cases and everything, but for the most part, you know, it's doesn't happen very often where there's like a contested catch in terms of, well, what does the rule really mean here and what happened? Because regardless of your of what the rule says, there's going to be those tough plays.
Well, of course.
But that's what kind
just
of makes
in general, like just I mean. There's always going to be edge cases to every rule. But if you're just thinking of like, say, you're creating the game of football, like how would you define a catch? Two hands on the ball. Do you have to get 2 feet, like 1 foot down, 2 foot in bounds? Do you have to move? Like, you know, people used to be allowed to play defense in the NFL. And so someone would go up over the middle, have two hands on the ball, clearly controlling it, and then get popped and the ball pops out. Is that a catch and a fumble? Is that an incomplete pass?
Right.
Like, we have rules for it now, but I'm just saying, like, if you were inventing the game.
I think it's, I think the 2 feet down rule is good. If nothing else, just because it's exciting.
Yeah.
Seeing that first foot go down, the second foot pop down. It's arbitrary.
It's all arbitrary.
You just have to decide what it is. I mean, it's a game, so that you just make up at some point.
You make up a rule and then stick with it. And that's what they did, and they applied it correctly. So you can whine all day.
Yeah, so something I want your opinion on, Slappy. A couple weeks ago, you said that, like, you should be trying to hurt players.
Yeah.
So do you think that you should, like, grab a guy by the arm and twist him around backwards?
No.
Referencing Dallas Goedert's injury.
Yeah. I didn't think that was egregious, but
to me it was like, I don't know. You're
doing anything to get a guy down. You're grabbing, right. You're pulling, you're falling, you're
it didn't look great. But that could I can give him the benefit of the doubt that he's just trying to make a play.
Because when you're catching someone from behind, you're just reaching whatever you can. But when I say hit with the intent to hurt, it's obvious. Like, I think.
I know what you mean, Slappy.
I know, but I just to be, I'm like actually trying to think. Because, you know, when you hit someone, you hit with the intent to go right through them to hurt them. But well, you're not like.
I never played football.
Putting their arm over your knee and cracking it.
Yes. I never played football, Slappy, but I was a baseball player. And, but like takeout slides.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make it so you don't want to stand there next time. I'm not trying to make it pleasant for you. Or, you know, I played a little bit of infield at some points. And like if I'm second baseman and I'm fielding a throw and there's a takeout slide at me, like, I know the rules have changed, and at least professional baseball, they don't really like the takeout slides anymore. But if I'm standing on the base and the runner does a takeout slide, like, I don't have a problem with it, but I'm not going to say I'm not trying to land with my elbow down.
Right.
To be like, all right, it's going to hurt you too. Like, do you want to do that takeout slide again next time? And it's not like, you know, it's not intent to injure, but it's intent to be like, I don't want you to do that again. Not because it's dirty, not because it's bad, not because you don't have a right to. It's just, I just want you to be a Mary about it. So that's kind of, I mean, all that gamesmanship is fun. All those games within the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun stuff. And I don't like seeing it taken away.
It makes it less fun. Like I, you know, it could be that I'm just, you know, an adult. But I used to really love watching all the, following all the teams in Philly. Now I just kind of watch them when they're on.
Yeah. It's fun. And, you know, I was at the game yesterday, did a tailgate. You know, basically was down there at the South Philly the whole day.
Yeah.
And I feel kind of bad for the sports ball people. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. Like, your team wins, they lose, whatever.
Doesn't matter if you're from any other city.
Well, yeah, but we don't have to really worry about losing because
right,
we're winners here.
But yeah, exactly. That's what Philly's known for.
No, but just like being around, and everyone's in a good mood.
Yeah, it's a fun day.
Everyone's, you know, high-fiving, saying go Birds. And you're at the stadium, and you're just yelling and screaming and high-fiving and hugging. And the other thing is, what's nice about it is it like all this like super PC world and everything and all the thing everyone's freaking out about is that that just does not exist there.
No, nobody cares.
Everyone's screaming whatever they want at the other team. And it's all funny.
I was fortunate enough to stumble into a ticket for now to the kids listening. This is a long time ago. But
the Philadelphia Quakers.
Yes, the Quakers, when they played. No, the Phillies in 08 when they won, the first half of that game, five, was delayed due to rain. So they played the last three innings 2 days later. Mm-hmm. And I lucked into a ticket for the second half. So I got to be down there when they won it. I was at the game. Oh, wow. And it was just it was really fun. Like, everyone there, nobody cares about anything. All the like things you could argue about are just gone. Everyone's just in a good mood. And this was the first championship in Philly since, I guess the 83 Sixers. So everyone was in a great mood. We stays in the stadium till like, I don't know how many hours. Roll out on the Broad Street. We were out there till 6 in the morning before I had to go home. Like, I had to leave. But everyone was just sitting, you know, high-fiving and hugging, having a good time. And, you know, I know things get damaged when crowds do that, but it wasn't a riot.
Right.
Like, at least where I was. But it was just fun because nobody cares about anything. Nobody cares about your politics.
Even the, I forget who it was, but even the Catholic Church has stated, or at least like a bishop or something, has said like, no, sports are great.
Yeah, they're fun. They're a good distraction. And I don't know. I like sports. But not like I used to, because it's not as fun to watch anymore because you're not allowed to play defense in the NFL and in college. But
what side of the ball did you play, Slappy?
You know, back when I played, they didn't have this targeting rule where you get tossed. Like, you know, you were allowed to hit quarterbacks back when I played, son.
Well, as a baseball player, I played both sides of the ball, so.
Yeah.
How's that?
Well, they used to teach us on an interception, go hit the quarterback.
Hugh Douglas on, was it like Chris Matthews? I'm
surprised you remember that. Yeah, that was textbook. He did everything D linemen are taught to do on an interception. Mm-hmm. And it was a clean block. It was in front. It was a good block. And he got flagged. And like, that was a big play, too. I can't remember the situation, but I remember like, could not believe they flagged him.
Yeah.
And at the time, we're saying like, well, quarterbacks can make a tackle.
You know? What was the, Eagles-Dallas. Buddy Ryan instructed one of his players to go and just destroy the punter or kicker.
And after the game, I was at a coaching clinic years ago, and these are all these big meathead fests where all these football coaches come together and listen to other football coaches talk and like hang out with football coaches. It's a bunch of people like trying to talk about how great their playing career was, overstate whatever they did in their career.
Any three-year letterman there?
What's that?
Any three-year letterman there?
Several. Love the football coaching community. I feel at home there. But anyway, one of the coaches presenting was an NFL coach, and he had Buddy Ryan's old playbook. And he had a defense called the Polish defense. And the rules at the time, this would have been allowed to happen. So the situation is it's end of the half or end of the game. Other teams got the ball, you know, inside the 2-yard line, whatever, going in for a touchdown. Put 16 guys on the field, because the way the NFL worked back then, you'd have to snap the ball, the clock would run, and then you have 16 guys, so you stop them, and you just keep doing it until the clock runs out, and then they get one on time down, but you just keep doing it and make them kick a field goal. I don't know if you ever did it in a game, but it was in this playbook.
I never heard of it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, what I was saying was that he had his player clock the kicker, and after the game, they asked, like, oh, well, why'd you do that? Like, he's like, well, he's got a helmet, doesn't he?
Yeah. Kickers can
make tackles. That was back when the kickers just had the single bar on their helmet.
Yeah, Buddy Ryan was famous for saying, "Get you got rid of Chris Carter because all he does is catch touchdowns."
That's great. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I got a question for you though.
Oh shoot! You know, hold on. I have questions for you.
What?
I have questions for you too.
All right.
I forgot to prepare though.
My question was going to be, what happens if someone like BlackRock buys all the Bitcoin?
Oh, no, it's over. Obviously.
But in seriously, though, that's a concern a lot of people have. I've seen tweets going out like, because I guess that ETF, whatever, I don't know. I don't follow news. I don't know what's going on.
This is a point I forgot to bring up on our episode when we were talking about the ETFs, this kind of thing. So it's good that you're saying this.
So what do you think would happen? Like, what if they just keep – the price just goes up so high and, like, you know, we're in a recession, whether you believe it or not. Times are getting tough, and, you know, you've been holding your Bitcoin because you're not on zero. So you sell it to BlackRock, and then they just get all of it, or effectively all of it, essentially all of it. Then they can do whatever they want. What happens? What happens to the Bitcoin system? Does it turn into fiat because now they can just issue notes?
Well,
or does it just crash everything and like nobody uses it, has no demand? So BlackRock spent all that money and now has nothing. But who cares? Because they just get more money.
Well, there's a lot to unpack here. Because does BlackRock get all 21 million Bitcoin? As you approach 21 million, and this could be very, you know, millions and millions of Bitcoin away, that is obviously going to cause the price to go up. If there's someone that is out there and willing to buy Bitcoin at any price, which is what would have to happen if someone wants to take on the entire stock of Bitcoin, then the price just goes absolutely parabolic. And there would just, impractically speaking, there'd just be no way for them to do it. Now, they could try to, like, slow play it and everything. But, I mean, how do they end up being on the opposite side of every transaction for Bitcoin?
Right.
that's not a very practical thing. And then obviously, what are they going to do with the Bitcoin once they have it? They're just going to sit on it indefinitely?
Yeah, just to keep it out of our hands.
And are they just going to like do a multi tens of trillions of dollars worth of doing this just to destroy Bitcoin, and then basically they're just burning money.
Say what you want about BlackRock, and they have a lot of power. They're not in the business of making bad investments.
Right. So the other thing too is just to say it, like, yes, BlackRock and companies like that, they're going to start buying Bitcoin.
They are.
It's inevitable. And if that's not in your game plan of what's going to happen with Bitcoin, I don't know what to tell you other than you don't know what's going on or how Bitcoin's going to monetize and gain adoption. We want this to happen.
Yes, exactly. And I think years ago, it was 2017 when the Bcash fork happened. And that's what people were kind of saying. Like, we want to keep this like libertarian money.
And that's like idiotic. Why?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why? Then there's no point to it and there's no value. But I remember that argument like being relatively common.
Well, it's like I came across it with someone kind of promoting Monero recently. And I'm like, why? Like, what is the point of, and like, well, you could just have it in like small currencies or like small communities exchanging stuff. And it's like, well, that doesn't really provide much overall value. And it's like that puts Monero's ceiling. If that's what your goal is, just have it among some, you know, people that super duper care about privacy on the internet. There's going to be a couple of people exchanging Monero around. Basically, their currency is about as valuable as Tide when it became currency in Baltimore some years ago.
That's right. Forgot about that.
And it's like, well, it was useful for those people. And okay, yeah, it was. But are you seriously saying that you want to be a person that had to use Tide in inner city Baltimore in the 90s or wherever that was? Like, that's... Do you think that's a good life? Do you think you're going to be economically like viable and productive and everything? Or are you just doing that because that is the thing that is keeping you from, you know, not having any food to put on the table at all?
Or not able to pay your drug? You support the man and big giant corporations.
Sure. But like that's what's fun. Like, you have to compare these ideas to real life things and see what it actually means. If you're going to say that, like, oh no, we're just going to be like a little renegade underground currency and everything, just a couple of people are going to be transacting in, it's like, okay, literally have fun staying poor.
Yeah.
It's so idiotic and stupid that if you're going, like, we talk about this as principles of economics, the larger your economy is with more people, just all else equal, the more people you have interacting in your economy, the wealthier it's going to be, because you can have the division of labor and specialization, and you can be way more productive and efficient doing that than if you have an economy of just a few people.
Right.
So the idea that your goal is to have your currency operate, or your money operate, in an economy that is very limited in the number of people that are involved in it, is saying, it's just shooting yourself in the foot.
Right.
It's stupid. It's not good. And it's just not going to work, as opposed to saying, all right, we're building our money because we are trying to get it such that literally everyone's using it. Like, what do you think is going to have more staying power? A thing where you've got 1,000 people across the world interacting with it, or
billions,
the entire world minus 1,000 people using it?
Yeah.
And if you want to be like, oh, well, the entire world minus 1,000 people isn't a total 100% adoption, therefore, well, there's going to be competing currencies. Yeah, go ahead, have that. It's the dumbest, you know, point in the world, and it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. It boggles the mind, and it's frustrating to hear people say stuff that is just based on such economic ignorance, especially yeah, well, when they're coming from people that should understand this stuff and look down upon people that don't have, that are, you know, more normy ideas of economics.
I will say that's a valid question for someone to ask, but I know what you're saying.
It's a valid question for like a normie. Yeah. Cause yeah, we have that question too. We're getting into Bitcoin saying like, cause I remember I said to you, it was after I did that JW thing. And I said like, yo, actually money's gotta be one thing. And I'm like, why? That doesn't make sense. You can have lots of different monies in an economy. And I said, I know, I can't explain it, but when I heard it, it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
And then I went and learned, so I could explain it and understand it better.
Right.
So it wasn't something
I remember that conversation. I remember like, wait, what?
It was a pivot for us. It was a big turning point.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was trading all those trash coins.
Right. And we were saying dumb stuff like, well, Bitcoin's like the first one. It's going to be a good one. But like, it's just like the idea of Bitcoin is the good thing. And then other people are going to like build on it. We're going to have a lot of different stuff. It sounds right if you don't understand the finer details of it.
Yeah. And we didn't understand. I certainly didn't. Because I remember at the time thinking like, I'll keep half my crypto in Bitcoin because that's going to be, that's like the big one. That's the safest one. But there's just so much opportunity for this, the one to challenge Bitcoin. And I want to get in when it's like less than a penny and then it goes up to $1,000, you know, right. That's what I was doing back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just chasing cuck bucks, plucking cuck bucks.
Exactly right. It took a little while. Like you said, thank you, Rollo, but thank you, JW.
Yeah. But what was the other thing we're going to talk about with that? Because this was on Twitter today that someone brought up the line, Bitcoin's not for, Bitcoin is for anyone, but it's not for everyone. And I was like, oh, that's a good little saying. I like that. And then I said, well, that's good, but that's only like, excuse me, appropriate for like right now in this moment
of,
the adoption phase, because Bitcoin ultimately will be for everyone if we're trying to have it be the global monetary standard.
Well, what I like, or what comes to mind when you say that, is when a couple of years ago we used to talk about being pioneers, like going west. And you could have said, you know, the West is for anyone, but not for everyone, when they were still exploring it. But as it continued to build up, now anyone could go to California. I don't know why you would want to,
right?
But you could. Whereas in 1840, that would have been quite a trip.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I said, I was rebutted back, and they said, well, not everyone's going to be able to own their own private keys, and there's going to be layers that they're going to be interacting with things that aren't literally technically Bitcoin. And I'm like, who cares?
Yeah.
Money certificates are legitimate. And like, what Saifedean Ammous wrote in the Bitcoin Standard explains how there's, and he's not necessarily laying out exactly what's going to happen, but laying out a very plausible situation and one that is likely to happen, somewhat like how he explained it, that this like destroys the central banking cartel. What Bitcoin does is it lowers the barrier of entry that anyone could be a quote central bank unquote.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have, trillions of dollars and be super well connected. You just have to be able to spool up a node and just acquire Bitcoin on chain, and then you can put layers on top of it and have money certificates and everything, so that it's easier and faster to transact and stuff. Because remember, on chain Bitcoin is not a parallel to your credit card. It's not a parallel to Venmo. It's a parallel to central bank settlements.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can make that happen in 10 minutes for a couple pennies, that's huge. That's super, super huge. And the thing is, when it's, you know, Bitcoin's so easy to validate and the supply so easy to validate, and we have technology and tools that make it a lot easier and better to be able to make sure that when, if someone says, oh, I'm going to, you know, create a money certificate for this 5 Bitcoin I have, a layer on top of it for people to use, that you can validate that better and get in and out of it a lot quicker and easier. So that if they do give certificates out to like 6 Bitcoin worth of stuff, even though they have 5, that, you know, the consequences of that, the negative consequences, that is, will be much more immediate, and there will be much, much, much more competition, such that fractional reserve will be much less chance of it happening. And there'll be greater consequences. So it's just a better version of the system. We a much, 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 much better version of the system we have now. And I think it's just kind of goofy and weird to claim that if you're using a money certificate in the Bitcoin standard, that you're somehow not using Bitcoin. Like, it's just, maybe it's a little bit of semantics things.
Yeah, but because it's like, under a gold standard, right? You're spending the greenbacks, but it's still
right.
Gold.
You're still using gold.
You're still transferring gold. It's just on, you know, the paper.
Right. It's just another layer on top. So, and then the other thing too is, if that were the case, you can't say that Bitcoin's for anyone, because there is a limited number of on-chain transactions we're going to be able to do, a limited number of UTXOs that are going to be distributed. It's not for anyone to have.
It's true.
Because if everyone decided to go run towards it, not everyone's going to get a UTXO.
Right.
So it's not right to claim that the only way that it's that you know, you can use Bitcoin is on-chain or something like that. Because not everyone is going to be able to. So it's just kind of goofy. And what's frustrating to me, and I said this in the Twitter thread as a general comment, because the guy I was talking to, I generally like, and I think he's usually says some pretty good stuff, but generally speaking, there is a massive aversion in the Bitcoin community to the concept of money certificates and layers on top of Bitcoin that are not actually Bitcoin. But like, you know, just another layer to be able to smooth up transactions like we were talking about and making things a little bit easier and smoother. This idea, we talked about Fediments here a little while ago, and we've talked about this, how Bitcoin's going to scale. And it's so funny to me that when you bring that up, people have utter conniptions. Yet these same people are the ones that talk about how much they love Saifedean Ammous's Bitcoin, the Bitcoin standard. But that is exactly what Saifedean was talking about in that book. It's like, did these people not read it? Or did they just read the words and nothing actually clicked? There's just this hive mind around, you have to like the Bitcoin standard. And then there's all these other like little token things, if you will. That if you say these things and repeat these things, you're in the in-group with Bitcoiners. But it doesn't matter if you understand it or not, because you can't sit there and say, I love the Bitcoin standard, I agree with Saifedean on everything in there, and then turn around and say, I'm against money certificates for Bitcoin. Like, it's silly. But I think that's where it comes into, like, we've talked a lot about on this podcast, is how there's a lot of people that are just like utterly asleep at the wheel and don't actually know what they're saying.
Right.
They just kind of grab on to whatever's kind of popular and puts them in the in-group and the circles that they want to be in. And it's kind of annoying, like, you know, hardware wallets. It's the big one we talk about all the time. But it's kind of frustrating because you think that these people are on your side and you can have a conversation with them and they know what they're talking about, but they're like the other NPCs. They just happen to, for whatever reason, find whatever message we have to be a little bit more appealing. It's like I saw today, Dave Smith on Twitter was lamenting, I think it was Dave Smith, that like you have these people that are fighting the regime and fighting, you know, censorship and anti-free speech, and they get popular because they're, you know, doing a good job with that. And then they turn around and they become huge anti-free speech advocates and want to shut down their the people that are against them. Crack that horseshoe theory. And it happens all the time, and it's frustrating, but it's just because people don't have principles. And they're just kind of doing whatever. They're just like asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating. But at the same time, what's good, though, is that if they're going towards Bitcoin, it doesn't matter. Like, they can be wrong about stuff, and as long as they're using Bitcoin, it's still right. It's still pushing the ball in the right direction. So, be like the Eagles. They think they're playing rugby, but it's on a football field.
Mm.
But they're getting first downs and scoring touchdowns. So, mm-hmm. I want that other thing that I interrupted you earlier about. Maybe we'll do it next week. Oh, wait, no, never mind. Because we were only 36 minutes in, and even though we don't have to go for super long, I think I sent this to you last week, but you never responded, and it doesn't matter anyway. We're going to go for it.
Okay. So, I may not have seen it because I, yeah, but anyway, maybe I didn't, just thought it wasn't great.
I think this was a week. Thanks. About a week or so ago, Max Kaiser was on the Alex Jones Show. And he gave Alex Jones a 5-question quiz.
I did watch that.
That if he got the answers right, he would give him 10,000 Bitcoin.
If I remember correctly, the first question was a very simple one.
And Alex Jones got every one of them wrong. And was acting very silly over it. And yeah. So, Slappy, I want to test you on it. See if you can win Max Kaiser's 10,000 Bitcoin.
I don't know if I can.
All right, so you got to get all 5 right. No. Are you ready? Question number 1. What is the total supply of Bitcoin?
Are you going to, like, actually me?
No. And that right there tells me you know the answer.
Yeah, I know the answer. I mean, are we really doing this? 21
We're really
million?
Doing it. Yes. So do you want to tell the audience why you asked if I was going to actually you?
Because it's always going to be approaching 21 million.
Right. But you could figure it out, though. You can just go, you know, every 4 years is a halvening. And yeah. So it's 50 Bitcoin. And so you could calculate and figure it out. But okay.
But
so
that would
Alex
be,
Jones,
if we did that. It might be the first time since school that I use calculus.
Yeah. Would that be calculus?
I don't know. It's approaching a number. I know that was in calculus.
Nah, that's true.
Probably not, though, if you're just dividing.
It probably is calculus. I don't know.
Probably not.
I don't know. But yeah, Alex Jones was just like, I think it's a fixed number. And he's like, well, how many is it? He's like, I don't know. All right. What is the frequency of the difficulty adjustment? Question number 2.
You know, I should know this one. It's every 2 weeks.
You got it. Actually.
Yeah.
It's a certain number of blocks so, right? But it's, you know. Question. All right. You're two for two. Question number 3. What is the hashing algorithm that's used in mining?
Yeah. SHA-256.
Got it.
Wait.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop you because I do remember you sent me this, and I did watch the beginning, and I saw he couldn't get the 21 million, and I was just busy at work, and I never got back to it. I'm surprised he didn't get these.
We'll talk about this when we're done, but we'll get through this.
All right. Go ahead.
Number 4, frequency of new blocks.
10 minutes.
Yeah. So you could say for the frequency of the difficulty adjustments, you could say, all right, well, there's six blocks, supposed to be in an hour. Right. And then, because that's technically when the difficulty adjustment was there, 144 blocks in a day, so times 14, would be technically the right answer, but whatever. And then question number five. The hardest question there is Craig Wright's Satoshi Nakamoto.
Oh, man. absolutely not.
So he couldn't even answer that.
That's funny.
He didn't even guess anything. But
he didn't even say yes or no.
No, he was just like, I don't know. And he was like making excuses, like, oh, you're just trying to like make me look like an idiot in front of everybody. You deserve to be made to look like an idiot because these are freaking basic fundamental questions that it proves that you have spent no time learning, like no time at all learning about this stuff, even though you are railing against how bad the current system is and these evil people. And we have an opportunity to attack these people at the source of their power, their ability to create money out of thin air. That is the seigniorage, their control of the money system.
And he talks that about the central bankers a lot.
Right.
I mean, I don't listen to Alex Jones. I don't really know that he does, but that's what I think of when I hear Alex Jones, like the central bankers.
Yep.
I think he's funny. I'm not like.
Oh, he's extremely entertaining.
I'm not an Alex Jones guy.
No.
That's pretty embarrassing to be that. Like, if you Google Bitcoin, if you just Google Bitcoin, I'll bet you some. I mean, in one of the hits, if you click a link, it's going to say 21 million.
I know. And on the one hand, I know this kind of stuff. And if you're listening to this and you didn't know all the answers, that's okay. Because I know that like this is this like we just hear 20. I go on Twitter and scroll for 15 seconds and I see 21 million 14 like times.
All the time. Yeah.
You know, SHA-256, it's something you hear when you're in our circles, the difficulty adjustment too, the 10-minute block time. That's, you know, and then Craig Wright, I mean, if you're engaged at all, you should just know that we don't know who Satoshi is.
Right.
And the Craig Wright
could come from a Google search.
Right.
Like if you did any little tiny bit of research on it.
Or if you're listening and you're kind of getting into it and we give the answers, you go, oh, yeah. Oh, how did I not know that? That's better. But then again, you're not someone. Maybe you do feel this way, but you're at least listening to us. And if you didn't stop listening to us, especially after the Joe Biden economic report, then and if you did, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
But you're interested in trying to solve these problems and you're interested in solutions and exploring what Bitcoin is. And so now, I'll give you credit. And not to mention that the one time when I sent the link to a random person in my DMs accidentally came on and said how he was, you know, looking at Yeti Cold and was learning how to code so he can verify the code for himself. I mean, yeah,
that's cool.
We have good listeners. We have freaking good listeners and I love it.
Question on Alex Jones. Does he like talk about Bitcoin in a sense like I know he throws out lines, like does he say things like we need to get on Bitcoin?
I don't know. I think it's probably about the same as like a Tom Woods or a Dave Smith.
I think they know those answers, though, or at least some of them.
Probably. Yes.
I know Tom Woods absolutely knows 21 million. He has to. He's got to know the 10-minute
block. He just finally took his money off Coinbase or wherever it was.
Nice.
No, I mean, it's you're probably right. I would bet that they would know these answers.
Like I'm pretty sure it's not like they're 21 million.
Sure, but it's not like they're savants. Do you think they would know what the SHA-256 is, the hashing algorithm?
Probably not.
Or the difficulty adjustment?
Probably not. They probably don't know what the difficulty adjustment is.
Right. And it's we've been critical of guys like this.
That being said, I don't know. Maybe they do.
It's bad enough that it's kind of a toss up.
Right. Right. That's true.
And not that you and here's the other thing. You don't have to be super technical.
I'm not super technical.
Well, you don't have to be, you don't have to necessarily even know this stuff in order to use Bitcoin. But at where we are in this stage of Bitcoin, it's something that you would know if you're getting involved and getting into
it. You would accidentally and then we just, learn that.
Right. And we just know that the way they end up talking about Bitcoin and the amount of time they spend on it and
just they the don't get it.
Just taking self-custody of it finally, let alone not even running a node, that they don't get it. And they don't seem to really care that much. So it's super frustrating. And that's why it's like, dude, like you're talking about the right problems, but it feels like you're more interested in getting notoriety, fame, and plucking cuck bucks, talking about the problem and getting people all wound up and giving them rage porn, as opposed to actually trying to figure out and implement solutions. And I'm not even talking about saying that they're not pure because they're not on zero. It's just, they're just, it's just another way to, oh, well, you know, it's like a calculation. Oh, well, if I talk about Bitcoin every 28 episodes, then that'll keep
the Bitcoiner. Then I got the receipts.
Yeah. Then I'll be able to, you know, that'll not get my normal crowd that wants to, you know, rage about whatever stupid things happening in a university that no one's ever heard of. That has no effect on anybody's lives except for the three people that are actually involved in it. But then we'll like keep some of the people that are interested in Bitcoin kind of hooked. So yeah, this will basically optimize our views because that's what it feels like all this is. And it's like, well, we have to pay our bills for the stuff. Okay. Like if that's what the purpose of what you're doing is, okay. But that's different than actually trying to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And you can do both. I'm not saying that like if you make money on a podcast or being a, you know, of a personality or something that you can't make a living on it. If you can figure out how to do that honestly and all that kind of stuff, fantastic. I hope we have people that can do this full time and make money off it. But we're in a position right now where it's just way too easy to grift. So, all right, before we get in trouble, I know you got to go anyway.
Yeah.
Although at this point, we've said enough stuff about enough people that it doesn't matter. So. All right, anything else, Slappy?
Well, I got nothing.
Do you want me to DM Max Kaiser or should you DM him for his 10,000 Bitcoin?
Oh, man, I'll even make a deal. I'll let him give me half.
That's fair.
So right. Yeah, we'll send him the link. We'll say I got the questions right. And then I'll split it with you, Rala.
That's nice of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, how many pairs of Rala and Slappy Shell underwear we can buy?
Oh, yeah.
Or how many expensive mugs that we can buy? Can you imagine, like, our dear listeners, just imagine. You bring an e-girl to your home and you open up a cabinet, not a cabinet, a hutch. No, what's the big like cupboard thing?
I don't know.
An armoire.
Yeah, there you go.
You open your armoire and it is just shelved with Liberty mugs that say this mug cost $1,000.
Yeah.
Just row after row, shelf after shelf of these mugs.
And then
utterly impressive.
And you just open it up and just leave it open when your guests come.
Yeah. Just be like, oh, I'm sorry. I am such a terrible host. My abode is such a mess. I left the armoire open.
Wide open.
I hope you weren't looking and seeing what was in there.
Well, that's my private stuff.
But while it's open, you want to talk about it a little bit? Do you notice that? Do you see can you read it? Do you want to give one to you so you can get it up close? See what it's like to hold one?
At that point, you wouldn't even care if it broke. Like, you could drop it.
I mean, that is
buy just, another one.
That's just the sign of being there.
Mm-hmm.
of really making it, that you're just like, go ahead and break it. Doesn't mean a thing. Yeah. It's basically, it's like a drop of water in the ocean.
That's funny. I was in college toward the end of my college career at a friend's house who, his dad was wealthy. They had a Aston Martin, a Vantage V12. I never been near anything like this in my life, let alone driven it. And he asked me
if I wanted to put it in the Hot Wheel slot.
I did, and it flew around and did the loop de loop and came out. Wow. But he asked me if I want to drive it, and I was like, no, because I'm gonna probably wreck it. And he's like, I got it to use it. You want to take it out? So I did, and I didn't wreck it, and it was fun.
Yeah.
But that's someone who, you know, he did well for himself monetarily.
I'm not that much of a car guy. But
neither am I. But a nice car is cool.
Yes. Yes. I agree.
And there's a
speaking of which, okay, we can't not talk about this. Apparently BSV still exists. And I think Exodus Wallet or something stopped running the node, or Coinbase stops, and it went into a it just messed everything up for the BSV people, because no one runs a node because it's super difficult. And the one guy who carries the water for them, through one of the head scammers, was like, well, you know, most coins out there, it's super easy and you don't have to be technical at all to run a node. But for BSV, it'd be like if everyone's running, you know, driving an old Suzuki or something, and then you've got to operate BSV node, it's like a fancy sports car. And you can't expect everyone to be able to know how to handle that. And it's like, wow, that is the BSV version of everyone of getting a Lambo. It's just being able to run a node. The most basic functioning of participating in the Bitcoin network.
I'm actually, I got to give BSV credit, or you know, I'm shocked anyone still is involved in that at all.
Okay, one more thing, Slappy, because this is also too funny. I have to read this to you. Hold on. Here we go. This is from the Twitter account Bored Ape Yacht Club. This is on November 6th, 2023 at 5:41 a.m. And here's the tweet. Apes, we are aware of the eye-related issues that affected some of the attendees of Ape Fest and have been proactively reaching out to individuals since yesterday to try to find the potential root causes. Based on our estimates, we believe that much less than 1% of those attending and working the event had these symptoms. While nearly everyone has indicated their symptoms have improved, we encourage anybody who feels them to seek medical attention just in case. So, if you're throwing crap around like a bored ape would do, congrats, you're going to get pink eye. Literally, apparently. So,
let's end it on
that. We're going to end it on that, and you ruined it, Slappy.
I'm not asking questions.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Peace.